Money FM 89.3, best of the breakfast huddle.
Now we're going to talk about the Regional Comprehensive Economic Partnership.
So it was signed on November 15th last year, virtually held 37th ASEAN Summit. And it's been a long journey because it was first introduced during the 19th ASEAN Meet held in November 2011. Negotiations kickstarting during the 21st ASEAN Summit in Cambodia. This was in November 2012.
Yeah, it was an eight-year rollercoaster ride of negotiations. And that included the withdrawal of India, one of the Asia's most major economies and original RCEP negotiating parties at the 11th hour. It was finally done.
So RCEP is now the world's largest free trade agreement to date, comprising about 30% of global gross domestic product and covering countries that add up to close to a third of the world's population.
So moving forward, almost 4 months since it's been signed, how has RCEP impacted the region's trade and investment, and how can businesses here in Singapore actually take advantage of it?
Let's find out from Leonard Young, Group CEO of Tricor. Leonard, good morning. How are you?
Yes, good morning. Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity to speak with your listeners this morning.
Let's break the ice a little bit. It is the 8th of March, also happens to be International Women's Day. Who would you like to dedicate today to?
Well, I think there are two persons in my life that made me who I am. One has to go to my late mother, who gave me all the opportunities and, you know, taught me right from wrong. And the second I have to say is my wife, Karen. She's been a pillar for me. She's a fantastic person. She's a professional. She's a mom. She's a wife. And she's a partner. And without her, I wouldn't be here where I am today. And I mean that in a broader sense for business and from a family perspective as well.
Very well put, sir.
Yeah, to all the wives, the mothers, the daughters out there, bravo. So let's talk about this RCEP then, you know, and perhaps later we can talk about actually why it might be good for women. But right now, let's talk about why it's good for the region, all of the ASEAN nations in it. Just give us a quick overview of what it entails.
Yeah, so absolutely. So I think if you take a step back, there's always trade agreements, and most trade agreements are bilateral in nature. That means one country to another. And I think if you look at horizontally across, you know, the world landscape, we've become more interdependent on global supply chains. And what this does, RCEP, is that it's the most significant trade agreement from a bloc perspective. So to give you some context, the USMCA covers about 500 million people, 24 trillion. And EU is about just under 500 billion people and $15 trillion. But RCEP, as you mentioned on the call, is over 26 trillion and covers over 2.3 billion. But what it does is, among these 10 ASEAN countries, you've got five other key regional players: China, Japan, Korea, Australia, New Zealand. And especially China, Japan, Korea, who traditionally did not have such a comprehensive trade agreement between each other, today are encapsulated in the 10 plus 5 agreement. So that makes it quite significant. And then on top of that, I call it trade agreements plus with benefits. The benefits come in because there's now an articulation of some key terms around electronic commerce, intellectual property, and then some description on investments in services. Very, very different from investments in manufacturing. As you know, today, even with Singapore, we're moving more towards a services-oriented economy. So those would be the three benefits that are coming with the global trade on top of the 10 plus 5.
Leonard, we're going to dive into the details of how businesses can take advantage of RCEP. But, you know, what would you say to businesses right now who are listening? How would you convince these businesses who are going, hey, wait a minute, I can't even survive COVID and you want me to capitalize on the region? What would you say to them?
Well, you know, I think right now in the global economy, there's a K-shaped economy. K meaning the alphabet K. There are those businesses that are in the upper part of the K and those that are in the lower part. So in the upper part, you've got the financial services industry, the hedge funds, and private equity and so on. And those businesses are doing really well because when the cost of money is close to zero or zero in certain circumstances, that allows you to have a phenomenal leverage. Then there are businesses that are in the lower K. In the lower K, you have the traditional leisure, travel, And those ones are being hit very, very hard. So I think in between the upper and lower K, there's a spectrum of businesses that are doing okay. And what this does is, if you look off the back of COVID, global GDPs have dropped. GDPs in Asia has dropped. GDPs in Singapore has dropped. So I would say that, you know, there's never a good time, but now is probably the best time to make the investments because the opportunities are immense and there's been almost a lifting in terms of the pressure on cost structure.
So, Leonard, what I'm quite curious about is how, if you're a Singapore business, you take advantage of this massive trade deal, because it can be quite a complicated process expanding overseas. Would RCEP make it more efficient? Would it make it easier for Singapore businesses?
Absolutely. So RCEP has a few features that make it really, really advantageous, and it has to do with the rules of origin. And as you know, with global supply of products and services, there's import of raw materials from different places, and then it gets made, and then it gets reprocessed, and then shipped out. So Singapore, being a very advanced services economy, very high levels of labor force, education, and so on, really is poised to be the capital for a lot of the whole coast that operate the businesses around ASEAN, namely usually around Indonesia, Thailand, Malaysia. And Singapore happens to be in the right place to be able to be those holding structures, to be the brains behind the structuring of these investments across Asia. And what this does is that because of the single set of rules, the common certificate of origin, and really a clarity around how tariffs are calculated, Singapore stands to benefit if it can orchestrate the positioning of itself as a place to do business for a lot of the manufacturing and services.
You talked earlier about this K-shape growth model. So when it comes to Singapore, and if we apply that, do you think there are some certain sectors that would grow more than others thanks to RCEP?
Well, absolutely. Right at the top, you have the financial services, because as I mentioned, the leverage on finance. But as you move across the wider spectrum, technology, the services sector, and we know that the Singaporean government has been a big promoter of technology, startups, and so on. So I think that positions it very well to be capturing some of the benefits coming from our sector.
Leonard, it seems that every time a good deal like this has been signed, there's always some kind of geopolitical incident that occurs following it. You've got the situation between Australia and China, and most recently the situation in Myanmar, although Myanmar leaders have said that anything that was signed before the state of emergency is still in effect. What would you say to Singapore businesses right now who would naturally be concerned?
Well, you know, I'm a commentator on business and economics, and when it comes to politics, it's above my pay grade. But when I think about RCEP, RCEP really transcends a multi-decade kind of opportunity. So if you look through beyond what's happening today in the last 12 months, or in fact in the last month, and you think about what you're going to do and how you're going to position your business, your career in the next 10 years, 20 years, RCEP is really very compelling. And off the back of a decreased GDP, softening of the global markets because of COVID, a sharp drop in global foreign direct investments, my advice is basically, you know, move forward. I think humanity does better when we think and move forward than we think backwards. Mm-hmm. So I think this is absolutely a catalyst for growth.
I think the key you said there really is you got to look at your business for the next 20 years and how you want to position this. This is just right now. It could, you know, eventually
Absolutely.
It will develop in that sense.
Yeah. And
absolutely.
I wonder whether I might be able to pick up on that point. And I'm just going to throw you a bit of a curveball. Well, maybe not. It is International Women's Day. And we asked about who you were dedicating the day to earlier. But what I want to ask is, do trade agreements like this benefit women in particular? Do they benefit the cause for more equality? You talked about anything that makes humanity better being important.
Well, you know, I work in the services sector, and over 50% of the colleagues in my company are women, and slightly over half of the management team in you know, at Tricor are women. I think really today a lot of services economy plays very well to female participants because of a lot of them have undertaken education, training, professional development, you know, in the finance sector. And I think these play to the advantage and opens up a tremendous door for the next decade. So I'm excited there. I think it plays really well, and it opens up opportunities because of these global trade and the, you know, the lubrication of the global supply chain.
How do you see ASEAN's position with regard to foreign direct investment? You know, just to expand on that a little bit, and perhaps comparing ASEAN's position with the rest of the world, the likes of Europe or even America.
Yeah, well, I think if you see, there are really two trends. One is a regionalization of trade, and the second is the supply chain. Mm. And what's essentially different here is that it's a trading bloc. So if you think about manufacturing or services, so today if you catch a fish in Thailand and you have that exported to Singapore, that's easy. That's a fish coming out of the Thai waters into Singapore for food. But if you take the fish and it goes to Malaysia and it gets produced to be a can of tuna, and there's Italian olive oil in the tuna, you'd start to have to figure out what does that mean when it arrives in Singapore. Is the tuna, you know, from Thailand? Is it from Malaysia? Is it from ASEAN? And what it does today is that it takes away the complexity, because in the global supply chain, you have exactly that issue. The tuna from Thailand, it's manufactured in Malaysia with Italian olive oil, and it's ultimately shipped to Singapore. So this trade agreement enables you to recognize the different rules of origin and then to figure out the substance of how much of it is ASEAN. And because of that, it then receives its tariff benefits from a bloc perspective rather than from a bilateral. So you can have a bilateral today, but it doesn't recognize, it only assumes that a lot of products are made in one single location, sourced from one location.
Yeah, this is such a great reminder, actually, that the products that we see on our shelves, it's not as simple as we may think, it says on the label. But let's go a bit deeper even. The data bears it out over the benefit of free trade agreements. So FTAs here in Singapore have brought actual tariff savings of more than 700 million Singapore dollars, over 1.1 billion Sing dollars in 2009 and 2010, respectively, for Singapore-based companies. So that was way back. Clearly, this has a positive impact, and I wonder how it looks today. Can you just elaborate here? Because we also know that in Budget 2020 last year, Singapore's Market Readiness Assistance Scheme was enhanced to include FTA consultancy services to specifically help SMEs?
Yeah, so the experts, we've projected over 100 billion US in savings over a significant time period because of these tariffs. These tariffs have not come into play as yet, because it requires the ratification of a number of countries before it starts to kick in. So I think businesses in Singapore have at least a 12-month window to really take advantage of this. And I would suggest that, you know, if they're in the services, manufacturing, they should have a look at where and how they can position themselves. Another part that I mentioned earlier is about the benefits of e-commerce, intellectual property, and investments. So in the embedded in the trade agreement is, you know, Singapore is way advanced, but if you think about the 15 economies, it even states that there is a promotion of paperless digital signatures and online consumer protection. And these things, including intellectual property protection and trademarks and so on, play into the strength of the Singapore economy, because you're ahead of the curve and allows you to really take some of the learnings in Singapore and to be a leader in that sense from the RCEP. Because if we're going to create a regional commerce, that has to be warehoused and led by different countries. And I think Singapore is well poised to play in that. So there are really two opportunities. There's the traditional trade, manufacturing, plus there's also the services, which is backed up by these three things that I just mentioned. And one last thing to add is the investments on services are now further amplified, so businesses can actually own more substance in the operations that they might have previously, you know, had a lesser degree. So that's ownership structures in services corporations.
We've been speaking with Leonard Yong, who is Group CEO at Tricor. Leonard, really appreciate your time this morning. Take care and stay safe.
Not a problem. Thank you.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SBH Radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.